Off yesterday with a question, if you recall, that having established certain points of why Prisbol is both not affecting Torah law, most likely, but also more significantly maybe, or equally significantly, not evading the purpose of the Torah, and we talked a little bit about what it would mean for it to be Derabanan, for Shemitah's Ksafim to be Derabanan, and about the significance of the Isser of Hishamer, which clearly plays a huge role in this issue. But I left you with a question about the Tnai. Right, so if you recall, so the Gemara in Makos and Dav Gimel makes it clear, or makes it kind of clear, it's a little bit mysterious, that it's possible to invoke a Tnai in the context of Shemitah. So it's a little mysterious because the formulation has to be specific. You can't say that Shemitah doesn't work. You can say that this Chov is not going to be undone by Shemitah. But if you get the wording right, you get the intent right, so it is possible to stipulate out of Shemitah. You can make a deal that the loan will still endure after Rosh Hashanah. And this, as the Rambam explains, is a reflection of kol tanai shebamom in kayim, that in general, one can stipulate in monetary matters. There are some major exceptions, such as ribbis, and Yerusha is more complicated. But for the most part, you can make whatever deal you want between consenting adults and monetary matters, and this is apparently a reflection of that. Zavi?
Is there a possibility it could be because it's on such a small scale? Meaning it's between me and you, not like America and Asia. Like for just as
example. I don't know about the scale part, but it is about the concept. So, for example, if you want to say that the concept doesn't work, that Shemitah is not going to be chal, so then that becomes a problem. You're actually trying to rewrite the Torah. But if you're saying that the deal between us, even if it's a big deal, or a big group of people, but that this specific transaction, so in that sense, it's about localized versus globalized.
Well, it seems like when we do principles, it goes for everyone that we have a deal with.
Yeah.
So it's not just...
Oh, so because of Prisbol, are you trying to highlight a difference between Prisbol and this? Because that's going to be a part of the issue you want to figure out. Because this is not Prisbol yet, right?
Right,
so before, this is the problem is that here the Gemara says that there's a concept of Tanai, which is separate from Prisbol. So, Boaz, you want to address that?
No, I just wanted to ask that. I thought the Rabbim says that only the Lova can stipulate. And if a Mava makes a stipulation, then it actually doesn't go through.
Well, they have to agree together.
Oh.
Yeah, they have to agree to it, which may be part of the answer, but they have to agree to this deal. The Malva can't stipulate it unilaterally. So the question the Rishonim are concerned with, it's a major literature. This is what I left you to think about yesterday. Is so who needs Prisbol? So you have, in addition, we already saw that it could be that Moshe Strauss of Lebesdin could take care of it. And if not that, it could be Hefker Bezdin Hefker was always available to take care of it. But even without those, so on a one-to-one basis, you have the idea of Tanai. So who needs Prisbol? And so if you're looking to make it possible for borrowers to still exist, to still get their loans, so who needs Prisbol? So did you get a chance to see the various approaches in the Rishonim? If you look at the Ritva, if you look at the Ramban, so they list off a whole bunch of answers. And so what are some of the answers? Anyone help me out? And so what are some of the approaches? So among the approaches are that maybe the lender just doesn't know about this or forget about this and reverts back to our original concern that because he doesn't know about it, so maybe he won't lend. And again, Nilas Delas Bifnei Lovin comes out to the same thing. Or maybe he doesn't want to invoke this possibility and seem like he's giving up on the repayment happening earlier. Or maybe he doesn't want to insult Shemitah. It seems a little bit disrespectful to the Torah to say that I am conditioning against the Torah. Now, that's interesting to compare to what we've been talking about till now, that we're worried to what extent is Prisbol somehow avoiding the intent of the Torah. So apparently there is this concern that the Tanai is offensive to the Torah and Prisbol is somehow different, which is also interesting. So you have a bunch of these answers. The Ritva, the Ramban, quote all the Ritva in Makos and Gittin and the Rishonim in both places. here in our Masechta and in Makos, they'll talk about this, and they have various answers. And the most significant, perhaps the most relevant to us overall here, is among the answers in the Rishonim, is that we have a takana of Shvius Drabanan, Shmitas Shvius of seventh year Drabanan, so that Shalot Tishtakach Tari Shvius. So that calls for a more affirmative reference to Shvius, an embracing of Shvius. So that's what some of the Rishonim already say here, that Prusbul addresses Shvius, and the Tanai goes around it. So if we're looking to remember Shvius, Prusbul is a better way to do that than just making a Tanai that Shvius shouldn't take effect. And some add another extra spin to this, that because we want Shvius to be remembered, so we like Prusbul better because Prusbul involves a Beis Din, and the Tanai could just be a personal thing. So the two individuals can make a Tanai together and no one will ever know. While Prusbul involves the publicity of Beis Din, and that is more conducive to the memory of Shvius that we're trying to preserve. Hi.
From what you just said,
mm-hmm.
would Prusbul be looked at more as a loophole around that? Because while we're having like a private transaction, like, okay, it may not be known, but at least like the transaction was made without the document saying that like you don't have to keep the laws of Shemitah, whatever that means, however we're defining that.
So the point is that they seem to be seeing it to the opposite, that this is more of a embracing or engaging with Shvius than the Tanai is. The Tanai just kind of pretends Shvius isn't happening, and the Prusbul engages it more frontally.
Even though seemingly it goes against...
They both would go against it, right? Because
right, but
either way,
is,
you're not canceling the loan.
Right.
But between the two, this is preferable, because this has more of an embracing of Shvius than making a Tanai against it. I mentioned yesterday about the difficulty with Harama, and this whole topic has this a little bit awkwardness, because is Harama the right word? Is Harama a negative word? So you find, for example, in the Mechiras Chametz literature, this is a major theme, that, you know, Mechiras Chametz is a harama, it's terrible, and others say, no, it's not a harama, it's okay, and then the Chasam Sofer says, well, it is a harama, but that's also okay, because harama's not bad, so all the language is all loaded. But here also, so that's a part of the background. So in Hebrew and in English it's difficult, so the word loophole I find problematic, because it sounds like there's just a space the Torah Ki'ilu forgot about, you know, like we just made room for it to be undone, and I don't know the right word, but none of the words seem to fit.
Well, I'm not saying forgot about it.
No, I understand.
It does seem like there's...
I know, so it just sounds like, oh, there's a little space that we're able to...
Maneuver.
To kind of, right, maneuver. So, if anything, it seems like the Rishonim are saying that Prusbul is better than that. It's not like the Tanai, which would have the same result, but is avoiding Shvius, while Prusbul is Davkinah. So that's itself a very interesting idea. Now, I mentioned the Bechor Shor because of his position on Mechiras Chametz and Haramos. The same author, Bechor Shor, in his Sefer on Gittin, has a comment about this. And he suggests a whole different Mahalach, that the reason we need Prusbul, even though the Tanai works, is because if you were to only lend with a Tanai, so as Boaz was saying, you need to have the consent of the borrower. So what if the borrower doesn't consent? So then maybe you will hold back from lending then. And then, boom, you're in violation of Hishamer. The only way you can be sure that you will be free from the Isser of Hishamer is Prusbul. Prusbul gives you more coverage than this Tanai does, because the Tanai is going to require his consent. Now, the Chasam Sofer has a tshuva, and again, to go back to Mechiras Chametz issue, if you learn that, so the Bechor Shor and the Chasam Sofer are the big opponents on that issue. The Bechor Shor saying it's all a harama, and the Chasam Sofer saying, no, it's good, etc. So here on this issue, there's a Bechor Shor and a Chasam Sofer. The Bechor Shor says what we just said. The Chasam Sofer references that in a Truva, but he actually says it in a more striking way, if I'm not mistaken, that the Chasam Sofer says that even if you go through with a loan with a Tanai, but you only do the loan because of the Tanai, that would still be a violation of Hishamah. While Prusbul is not. It's a fascinating idea. That if the Torah says, don't be afraid to loan because you're worried Shemitah is going to come cancel your loan. So the Chassam Sofer is saying that even if you do loan, but you only did it because you made a condition to get around Shemitah, that would still be a violation of the lav. Because apparently, this you have to kind of fill into what he's saying, that if the idea is an offense against Shemitah, right, you're showing your lack of faith in God by not working within the framework. So then, if you're going to contract out of it, even if you still give a loan, you're still undermining the whole message of Shemitah. So therefore, you would still be in violation of this law.
Is there any way not to undermine it?
Prusbul, that's the thing. So that's the surprise here. So a part of what you're seeing here, which is so different from the mindset that the world has been talking about this, but when you see what's written, I know we'll see more today about this, is that the whole mentality that Prusbul is the escape from Shemitah, but what you actually see in a lot of the literature, and some of what we've just mentioned in the past few minutes, and more of what we'll see in the next few minutes, is that Prusbul is considered to be engaging with Shemitah, and that it is the better alternative to a lot of other options, which are considered to be running away from Shemitah. And that's probably a complete reorientation, big paradigm shift from what the conversation normally is around Prusbul, but this is what emerges from the literature consistently. Boaz?
So, how does the Chassam Sofer read the Mar Makos?
That you can make the Tanai, it works, but it would still put you in trouble. That without the Tanai, so then the loan would be canceled. And we didn't get a chance yet to discuss, I was hoping to do that a little bit today, we'll squeeze it in tomorrow, the question of how the loan gets canceled in Shvias. So as a Machlokas Rishonim, does it happen automatically? It's just gone. Could we call Afkasa de Malka? And it's a parallel machlokas about Shemitah's Karkos also. So you assume that God already turned off all the agriculture and you're just supposed to comply? Or the mitzvah is about you not to do something? So when it comes to Shemitah's Ksafim, it's a parallel issue. Do we say that Shvias means the loan is just gone? It's been turned off, it's been deactivated, and it's just up to you to respect that reality? Or do they say that, no, you have to be Meshamek the loan, which is the way the language of the Psukim sounds a little bit, that it's you have to. And by the way, language of the Psukim, I just also wanted to mention yesterday, so we mentioned there is a machlokes about Hishomer, whether Hishomer, and you've got a chance today to see a little bit, it's at the Shari Tshuva and the Rambam, so there's a machlokes about what Hishomer is talking about. Is Hishomer talking about anyone who would hold back from giving a loan for any insufficient reason? And Shvias is just an example of what you might have thought is a good reason, and no, that's also a bad reason. Or is it specifically about Shvias? And that if you don't want to participate in the Shvias mentality, that's the problem. But other times when you don't want to give a loan, you wouldn't violate this. Right? We spoke about that yesterday. So a part of what makes it a little bit ambiguous is, if you're paying good attention a few weeks ago when we laid your A, so the placement in the Torah is a little mysterious because the order of things in Parshas Re'eh is that you have first the whole discussion of Shemitah's Ksafim. The Torah tells us about the whole thing. Here's what you should do. Then at the end of 7 years, you should cancel your loans. Okay? And then it goes on to tell the mitzvah tzedakah. And there'll be poor people, and you should help them out, and you should open your hands, and you shouldn't clench your fists. And by the way, there might be some terrible Bleal person who thinks that the seventh year is coming and therefore I'm not going to lend. So it would have been more understandable had that pasuk been a little bit earlier in the parsha. So when the parsha talks about Shemitah's Ksafim, if we were to close off by that and say, okay, here's the deal, you have to cancel your loans every 7 years, and don't say, oh, I'm not going to loan in the first place because Shemitah is coming and I'm afraid of that. So then we would have understood what the context was. But because the Pasuk actually appears a little bit later, after Tzedakah is introduced in the middle, so it becomes more confusing a little bit, or it leaves room for more interpretation. Is it going back to just closing off the point about Shemitah's Ksafim? Or is it a general Tzedakah statement? Which also requires a little bit of extra understanding, because when you give tzedakah, you're not expecting it back anyway. So you still have to explain the flow. So here the Torah says, give people donations that you don't expect to get back. And don't be intimidated from lending money, because Shemitah is going to cancel the loan, you're not going to get it back. But the pasuk before was talking already about things that you're not going to get back anyway. Presumably it was talking about normal tzedakah. Although the relationship between tzedakah and lending is a very close one, and that's also included in the psukim. So the presentation of the Torah, as the commentaries struggle with, does leave room for ambiguity as to what the focus is here. We're talking about Shemitah specifically, or we're talking about the general charitable instinct should not be compromised because of any other concerns. That's a part of where there's room to try to figure it out.
So then that gets to, is the mitzvah to lend money, or is the mitzvah to not hold back money?
So what would the nafka mina be? That's a very lundish question.
I mean, we're practically, I don't know, but...
It's a great...
That obviously is.
Sounds very, very lundish. So we got to find one nafka mina so we can make it... If you lend to a chassid, and you take a nedra not to do that, and you kippur shchalios b'shavus, it definitely sounds like it's got something to it. But you see, is he based the attitude? Is that the question?
Yeah.
Maybe that could be. You know, so that could be, because that actually parallels with staka. Right? So right before that, the Torah says you shouldn't clench your fist or harden your heart, and refusing staka. So there, the question is: does that mean you can never say no, or is it about how you say no? Meaning, what kind of mentality you have in saying no? So there could be, the focus may be an afkamina. Is the issue that you have to make sure the poor get their loans? Or it's the fact that you're scared about this that drives you to hold it back? That is the problem. It's an amuna issue. Maybe that's the...
I mean, if it's a mitzvah to give money, then it's a mitzvah. Like, okay, you should do it, but if you don't, like, you're just not getting the mitzvah. But if the mitzvah is you shouldn't hold back, then every time you are holding back, you're not doing the mitzvah.
Interesting. So it's what to think about. Eric?
Is there a mitzvah to give a loan to someone who is known to just take a loan and never give them back, or no?
So as we discussed that yesterday, which is interesting also because it's a subtle distinction, because if the intent of this pasuk of Yishamer is don't hold back loans for bad reasons, but there are good reasons. So you're not obligated to throw your money away, and we know that you're allowed to take a mashkon, you're allowed to take collateral. And some Rishonim even say it's a mitzvah to take a mashkon, which is a fascinating idea why that should be, that they actually encourage and say there's a positive value of taking a mashkon when you lend money, which is its own sugya, it's a fascinating idea.
The same thing as don't
sound like you're on the face of the... Well, maybe the idea that will make you more likely to lend in the first place because you'll be secure. But the point that emerges from there is that you're not obligated to put your capital at risk, to put the basic keren at risk and say, I'm not going to get that back. You're not allowed to take interest, but you are allowed to guarantee that you'll get repaid. So under that, Shemitah being an element.
Now I've done the follow-up question, which was, Rabbi, do you have any money I can borrow?
I understand. Right? It's awkward now. I can't do anything about it. Right? So there is, if you look in the Maram Shik, for example, so there's very, like you mentioned yesterday, with those points, very, very specific. So you have to figure out. So when somebody asks you for a loan, if you would have said no matter what, it's okay. If you would have said yes, but you're saying no because of Shvius, so then it puts you in the Issa. So it's a very specific zone. It's quite a thing to try to figure out. So one major point that we want to get out today, and then we'll have to continue tomorrow, is so this question of why not use a Tanai is a big issue that the Rishonim and the Achronim talk about, and clearly is a big part of the puzzle here in how Prizbul works, or what Prizbul is looking to accomplish. And the relationship between this and the Isser of Hishamer, and what Hishamer is about. We're not sure. Is Hishamer about Chesed, or is Hishamer about Shemitah, or is it about the combination of the two? And Shemitah is about Chesed, and it's about making sure that we have the Chesed mentality. So there was a major practical concern in the era of the Rishonim that the Rush talks about in his Tshuva and the Rashba talks about, that apparently for a long tekufa in the medieval era, people were just ignoring the whole mitzvah of Shemitah Sekzafim. They weren't canceling their loans, but they weren't writing prizbuls either. The whole thing was just completely ignored. And the Rishonim, they remembered the Torah, and they remembered this mitzvah, and they tried to figure out why the minig, so to speak, is against the Torah and against the din, or against the din derabanan, if that's what it is. And they tried to figure out, so what's going on? How come there's no prizbul, there's no shemitas ksafim, nothing's happening? So some suggest, and this is a serious enough suggestion, that the Ramah quotes this as a possible view of a halacha in the first sif of Samach Zayin, which is Hilchas Prizbul. Gave you this to look at. That it could be that everyone's relying on the idea that Shemitas Ksafim today is only Amidas Chasidus, that it's not actually even Midrabanan, and therefore they just figure, okay, I don't have to worry about it. Others suggest that maybe because the Tanai exists, as we see, so maybe, since we see everyone's just lending and collecting, even after Shvius, so it means there's an implicit Tanai. That it's understood that this Tanai, that is a thing, so we can assume that it was actually being utilized under implicit arrangement. The Rashba is a truth about this. You can't necessarily assume there's a Tanai if it's not said. So this was a big discussion. And there is a fascinating old drasha in the Tumim, which I really recommend reading. I was thinking about putting it on the sources, but it's long, but you should look at it tomorrow. Tumim was written by Rav Yonah Sanayevshitz. And Rav Yonah Sanayevshitz, in his commentary to the Shulchan Aruch, his two-part commentary, the Urim and Tumim, and the Tumim, Rav Yonah Sanayevshitz was a tremendous genius who wrote a ton of things all over the place. And he wrote this commentary on Choshen Mishpat, he wrote a commentary on Yeridei, he wrote a lot of other things. So in his commentary on Choshen Mishpat here in Samach Zayin, he has the whole drasha, really it's very worth reading inside, where he talks about the question of how could it be that we should rely on this idea that the Ramah quotes, the idea that we should say, well, you know what, maybe we can just ignore Shemitah Ksafim and assume that it's just a Midas Chasidus. He says, that's terrible. He says, first of all, he doesn't think that it's he thinks that it is a Chiyuv, certainly at least Rabbanan. But he emphasizes what this means, and this is very crucial for us. And he says that there is a notion, the Navi Yirmiyahu says, Hatsivilach Siyunim, that we should set markers, road markers, to go back to Tzion. And says the Tumim, he says, what better way to remind us of Geula and of Tzion than Shemitah? Because what does Shemitah represent? If the mitzvah of Shemitah, when it's in its full power, when it's fully applicable in our Torah and fully activated, it means that we have divine hashkacha that's palpable, that God is telling us, do this and I'll take care of you. And we respond in kind, we feel the emunah so tangibly, and then we see the results, we see that the extra crops, we see that we're taken care of. So what better way of feeling the power of Tzion, but thinking about what Shemitah means when it's fully activated, it's the real visible Hashkacha Pratis, Hashkacha Kualis, and real visible emunah. It's an amazing thing. So if we're supposed to try to remember about what Tzion is, so then I would think, he says, Shemitah is the best place to start. So if Chazal made a takana of Zecher v'Shvius, so we have to hold on to that very dearly. And he writes there that if a secular philosopher were to tell you, thinks this is a good idea, we'd say, yeah, it's an amazing idea. So all the more so when Chazal said, Zecher v'Shvius, we should remember it, that's what they were doing. It's an interesting parallel, not for now, but the idea of Sfiras HaOmer, and we'll remember later in the year, Sfiras HaOmer, which according to a lot of Rishonim, is also Zecher l'Mikdash, Bizman Hazeh. So what the connection is, and it's actually also relevant, maybe we'll talk about it next week, it's also relevant to the mitzvah of Lulav, where we, the exact role of Lulav for the rest of Sukkot after the first day has a similar role, so that we, Dafka, should mention next week, so remind me to come back to that before Sukkot, because there's a strong connection there. But that's what the Talmud writes, that there is this crucial role that this plays to connect us to Tzion. So it's very important that we should maintain the connection of Zecher L'Shvi'ah. So how do we do that? Again, Prizbul. So Prizbul is not the hiding from Shvi'ah. Prizbul is the engaging with Shvi'ah. So what he was addressing was what the Ramah was talking about, quoting from the Rush and from others, that maybe, okay, you could just forget about the whole thing. We just chasidus, so no Shemitah Ksafim or Prizbul. So that's terrible. But Prizbul, okay, so Prizbul does it. Prizbul is a Zeichel Shvi'ah. But to not have anything, that would be terrible. So here again, you have emphasized this idea that Prizbul is not the workaround or the run away from, but it is engaging Shvi'ah. So this, I thought, was relevant yesterday also. So as we had the Prizbul in the Beis Medrash, and a lot of the guys were wondering whether they need to participate or not because they don't remember lending money to anybody, they don't know if it's necessarily relevant to them. So I thought that this was the message, especially as expressed by the Tumim and others, that this is our connection to Shemitah's Ksafim. And when it comes to Prizbul, as you saw, if you participated yesterday, it's a very low-stakes thing. There's very little involved. Doesn't cost anything. Much time. It doesn't require you to put forth too many details. And the pratim of how that works, God willing, we'll talk about it tomorrow. But so if this is the way that you remember Shavuos, so it's worth doing. It's worth being a part of it. And I saw the Shuvos Reishis Bikurim that's written by Rabbi Tzalva Cohen in Vilna. So he also refers to the Tumim and his drasha there, and he says that he thinks there's kamat, nobody doesn't have some kind of debt to them coming from somewhere. So everybody should do this. Everybody should write a Prizbul and should fulfill this goal of Zecher L'Shvi'ah in this sense. And I know that we're over time, as I am for also, so I'll just quickly add a point or two to this. So there is a tshuva in the Tshuva Sesaris tshuva. Was a descendant of the Chassam Sofer and Biki Beger. They were married to each other. So the Soros Tshuva has a discussion in Choshen Mishpat about, is there an Indian to be Mahader not to write a Prizbul? Should we say, okay, if I'm a real tzaddik, so then I'll fulfill the Ratzon HaTorah, I'll cancel my loans, and I won't write a Prizbul. So he concludes that there isn't any such Indian. He concludes that the point is Zecher L'Shvi'ah, that's what Shemitah's Ksafim B'zman Hazeh is. And the Zecher L'Shvi'ah is fulfilled through Prizbul. So there's no inyan to be a tzaddik and to davka not do Prizbul, because Prizbul fulfills the idea of Zecher L'Shvi'ah. So I think this is consistent with what we're seeing here, that essentially there were ways to get around the issue of Milas Delos B'fnei Lover. But that would not have accomplished the goal of Zecher L'Shvi'ah. So what Hillel came up with, or what Chazal came up with, is the same result. But they could have also just made a Tanai, like the Rishon discussed. They could have made a Tanai on behalf of everyone. Let's make a communal Tanai. Lev Bezder Masna Lehem, that Shvi'ah is not going to cancel. But that would have meant that no one was paying attention. So instead, they formulated this route that is opt-in. That the only way you participate is specifically through a proactive step. You have to actually do something. You have to opt in. But by opting in, so there's a Zecher L'Shvi'ah. And that's the value that accomplishes both. But it also helps to reinforce and to retain the crucial value of Shlo T'mal Delos B'fnei Lovin. So that's our highest priority, that we don't want to slam the door in the face of the borrowers. We want to make sure that the Iker Mitzvah of Halva is fulfilled. But we also want Zecher L'Shvi'ah. So apparently the perfect sweet spot between avoiding Milas Delos B'fnei Lovin and maintaining Zecher L'Shvi'ah is the Prizbul. That's what seems to emerge from the way that it's understood. There's a tshuva about this, a sefer, Yashiv Yitzchak, which you've probably never heard of, but has a special distinction. He's a contemporary mechaber, and I think this is a record. He just came out with Chelek Nun of his tshuvas. 50 volumes. His name happens to be Yitzchak Shechter, but it's a different one. But so in this newest chelek, he talks about this old notion: is there an Indian to avoid Prizbul or not? And there was a hagga that Ben Ish Chai writes in Parshas Kisavo that he had a personal hagga not to avoid Prizbul completely, But that after the Prisbul was written, so the Prisbul, we do it now because it only covers what was before. It doesn't cover what was after. So if you take on a loan in the next week, you have to be aware of that. So he said he had a practice to Davka lend after writing the Prisbul so that he could be Meshamate that loan. So I'll make some kind of a loan after Prisbul. Prisbul will allow him to collect everything from the previous time. But he'll have a little bit of a kiyum in Shmitas Ksafim on that. And the Yashiv Yitzchak talks about whether is there such an Indian. So he compares it to the fact that some recommend you, if you don't have land in Israel, you should Davka buy land for Shemitah so that you could not work it. So that's not something that has really made it as a advisable chumrah. Or is it comparable to Pesach? Let's say if you sell all your chametz, but you leave a little bit to burn. So is there a comparable value here? So he comes to the conclusion that it's not been accepted by poskim, this idea of the Ben Yishchai, and we don't say to avoid Prisbul, we don't say to Davka, leave a little bit over to be able to do Shemitah Ksafim. But if you look at the Nitei Gavriel, Gavriel Zinner has many, many volumes of Halacha. So he has a volume on Shemitah and Prisbul. So he talks about this Ben Yishchai, and he writes there that Rav Shlomo Zalman didn't think this was an Indian, and that Rav Osner said that if you're going to do this, you should make it clear that it's not a chiyuv of any kind, it's just a Mishnas Chasidim. But he does try to bring a few positions. He says there are some svarim which support this idea. But one of the svarim that he quotes, I think it's interesting, it makes the opposite point. He quotes one sefer that says that he had a chumrah to davka make a loan intentionally to be l'kayim the mitzvah. What mitzvah? The mitzvah of Prisbul. Meaning that not because he wanted to cancel the loan, but because he wanted to fulfill the enactment of Prisbul and make sure that that actually is done because this is an affirmative value. So it's actually making the opposite point. It's not showing a chumrah to avoid Prisbul. It's showing to embrace Prisbul. The Prisbul is still the key. And I'll end on one note, and then I apologize again for the short time here, but tomorrow we'll fill in all the other parts of it. I'm going to have to run. But there is a fascinating statement that also is truly ironic when you think about the reaction. So Rav Herzog was the chief rabbi after Rav Kook, and he's the grandfather of the current president. So Rav Herzog has many writings about these concepts, and he writes, so why did Chazal put in Prisbul? If we see there's so many other ways they could have dealt with this issue, right? Most of Shtoros, Lubezin, Hefka, Bezin, Hefka, tonight, so many things they could have done. So why did they institute the Prisbul? He said, because while the other things would have worked, people wouldn't have understood how they operated, and the whole relationship to Isa, the Rabban, they wouldn't have understood. So they would have thought that the rabbis could get around anything. So therefore, they instituted Prisbul, so you'd understand it's not true. So the irony is that that became the reputation of Prisbul, that's what they think Prisbul is. It says Prisbul was instituted Davka, L'Haitzim Yiliba, and the whole point is that that shouldn't be perceived as so, that there is a need to actively engage with it. And that's what it represents. So, Bez Hashem, tomorrow we will look at some of the details that this Gemara that we saw, a lot of details, the kind of Bezdin, Edim, and to what kind of a process, the mysterious requirement of Karka, all of those things, what exactly that reflects, and how exactly the process is happening. Bez Hashem, we will get to that tomorrow. Everyone should have a wonderful Yom Shavuot Kalu Bo Kal Tov. Should be only good things. And we'll see you soon.